bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. My name's Ewan Rankin, and fortunately you've got me as host this week and not Carl, because Carl's come back from Florida and he's tired, so he's not coming on this week.
Oh, isn't it?
Tender feller.
I'm fully recovered from my abnormalities of last week, and I'm back to normal. Sorry. Fortunately, video and audio can be edited. And I'm joined by the usual fantastic supporting pros. Top left, I've got Mr. Chris Forsman. How's it going, pal?
It's going pretty miserable, but I'm making do.
You were saying about effluent floating in your shower when you use the tap, and
yeah, it's not pretty.
That's not good. I did say to you in the pre-show, mate, that's what you get for having a bank as a landlord.
Again, through no fault of my own.
Yeah, someone's taking.
Just want to reiterate.
Someone's taking a bonus out of the fact that you got poo coming out your faucet.
Oh, jeez. Bad luck. Thank God for Lysol. That's all I have to say.
Absolutely. Next to him, Mr. Alex Fox. How are you doing, bud?
I've got nothing coming out of my shower other than nice clean water.
Jolly good. you were at a function last night, apparently.
I worked.
Good lad.
I just underline that. I worked.
Worked.
You'll be able to have access to a studio soon, mate, if you want it. Because I've put an offer in on a place in Birmingham. So we've got a studio for the network. It's going to have, one half of it is going to be broadcast studio for British Tech, and the other end is going to be a photographic studio that any of you out there who are photographers in and around Birmingham, amateurs or pros, you can come and hire it. It'll have lighting and everything, so all you've got to do is turn up and plug your camera in, away you go. So watch this space. I'll give the address out, definitely. And you can go down and rob it.
Yes.
Take all my stuff. I've got some cabinets. So. Yeah. The Week in Photography. There's been a lot of news this week. Tons of stuff. Before we get into that, though, we've got some reviews. Thank you very much for those people that have left reviews. Always take it nice when you take the time to bother to put anything up. No matter what you put down, we will read it out on all the shows. We like getting reviews. Some of them are less flattering than others, but they still get read out, as is the first one. Jezza Fox has written a lovely review of the show. At whom is this podcast aimed? Not for anyone with any experience, as it doesn't discuss photography, only born in Canon, Nikon, iPhone chatter. Any newcomers to photography should be aware of the dogmatic comments made by one or two of the panel, rendering any advice suspect at least. This is the team that criticised a superb 15mm 2.8 low light architectural lens, which I've got to say I've never heard of, as being no good for portraits or use with small sensors. In a word, it's garbage, and don't even get me started on the fawning over Missy. There you go. If you agree with Jeremy, then please do write down that you do. And if you don't, do like a few other listeners have done and say so. But
I wholeheartedly agree with him.
Thank you for your review, Jeremy. It's very kind of you. Anders has written down, I'm relatively new to the world of DSLR photography and stumbled across this podcast. What becomes apparent very quickly, and I held my breath at that point, is these chaps really know their stuff. This is their bread and butter. They're taking time to sit out and help with us all for free. Can't really argue with that, can you? Even though some of their topics are way too advanced for my level of photography, it shows me what's possible and thus gives me inspiration and ideas. It's all wrapped up and presented in good friendly banter aimed at mates down the pub. A perfect way to learn new ideas, receive great advice and great tips and tricks of the trade at the same time. Goldmine for a podcast for any budding photographers out there. Thank you, Anders. Really appreciate that one. And the last one's from Homer 4x4. Homer, he's got mine already. He drinks beer. This podcast is well worth a listen. Very entertaining and informative. You also have a chance to join the photo walks, and why not join in the chat room on a Friday live? Another great podcast from BTN. Thank you very much, Homer. Do appreciate that. If you've got a review, we'll read it out. It's not a problem. Send it to us. And regardless of what you've put, we'll read out what you've said. Cheers. Reviews make a huge difference to us. Whether they're good or bad, just put them in iTunes and we should go up the rankings a little bit. So thank you for those that have taken the time to bother. Do appreciate it. The week's news. Facebook have got an application out there. They have an application for your photos, which is somewhat Instagram-ish, but apparently was there before Instagram were purchased by them. So it's not just a kind of take them on and then suddenly push it out. There was a suggestion last night on The Big Show that this was done to avoid a civil suit from being sued by Instagram for copying what they were doing. But $1 billion is an awful lot to pay to avoid a class act or, you know, an action from a firm that's probably going to get about $1 million out of you at most anyway.
Yeah.
Had a play with it yet or not? Chris, you said no.
I have not. Yesterday I was trying out the new Bump app and doing a write-up of that, so.
We've lost your video, by the way. Sideline.
You've lost my what?
Your video.
You lost my video. Well.
Oh, well.
Let's bring it back.
Let's do that.
That
sorry. No. But
I don't know if it's better or not, but
you say you've had
now
a go
you have video.
With Bump.
Yes. Yes.
So let's talk about Bump quickly then. Now, this is an application that lets you take your photographs from your iPhone or your Android device. You select them in the Bump app on the device, and then you hit the space bar of your computer using the phone, exactly.
Yeah.
And then it transfers. Now, I've got to say that one of the frustrations I've got is it is a pain in the arse getting video and photos out of iOS devices. It really isn't friendly at all. So this is going to be welcome. But does it do video as well or not?
You know what? I didn't try that, but I'm pretty sure it does.
Ooh. I love it then.
I'll have to look at that. I'll have to look at that. Here's something that most people don't know is Bump has actually been around since shortly after the App Store came online. And the original application for it was you would take your iPhone and your friend's iPhone and you would bump your hands together and it would transfer contact information.
Yeah.
Or if you're going to meet, you meet somebody, you're like, oh, I have here, let's bump our phones and we can call each other later.
Yeah, I mean, Paul in the chat room saying Bump Cash was around as well, where you could transfer funds via Bump.
Mm-hmm. And so the way it works is it uses location. This is what was one of the early apps that took advantage of location data. And it looks to see if two devices are in the same or a very similar location. And then it uses the accelerometer to see when they bump.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason why you have to actually physically tap your phone to the space bar. The space bar tells the version running on your computer that there's a bump because most computers don't have accelerometers and there's no way to really access it because the version that runs on the desktop is a web app. Mm. And then the action of your phone hitting the keyboard tells the phone that it's being bumped so the apps can talk to each other. I run into this problem all the time with getting, I use my iPhone a lot to do quick pictures for stories I'm doing on Ars Technica. And sometimes it's just like, okay, I need a decent picture. And I just set something up on my desk here and snap it with my iPhone. And then what I usually do is I keep my sync cable all the way upstairs in the bedroom by the nightstand because I plug in my iPhone every night before I go to sleep. So the sync cable's all the way up there. I don't want to go suss it out. I just take the picture and I email it to myself. But sometimes, again, there's a delay with that because I have my mobile or my iCloud email on my phone. I send it to my work email account, so it's got to go up to iCloud servers and then all through the other servers, back to our hosted Exchange server, and then it finally gets back to my computer. And sometimes that can take a couple minutes. So what I would like is just to have the picture, take it, get it on the computer, upload it to our CMS and publish it and be done with it. And so Bump is actually, it's not 100% straightforward as I would like, but it's still way faster than any other method I've used before to get pictures from my iPhone to my computer.
10X in the chat room is suggesting that phone view is also a very good way of getting stuff off your phone, which I haven't tried, so I'm going to give that one a go as well as. And there's a question from Super Chicken, would it work with a Bluetooth keyboard? It's not a physical connection, it's presumably just the simultaneous trigger.
Yeah, so the way it works is you go to bu.mp, so just a website, Bump, and it has a very simple little app. All it does is it sits there and waits for the space bar and your keyboard to go.
Which okay. would be anything, anywhere. Once it gets the trigger signal, that would be it.
Right, yeah. right. So it could be a Bluetooth, it could be whatever keyboard is connected to your computer. The web app is just waiting for the spacebar to hit. Now the app running on your phone is waiting for that accelerometer to yep. detect a bump. So you tap the phone to the keyboard, your phone will vibrate, it'll be like, okay, connecting. And then the web app will show that it's trying to connect to the phone. You hit connect, it uploads very quickly. You get all your images are right there. If you do multiple images, it just shows, you know, it's like a scrolling list. And there's buttons that you can share them on Facebook. You can get a link. So if you want to, you know, say you just want to show a bunch of pictures of someone, you can just hand that link and tweet it or put it in an instant message or whatever, email, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Or you can click a button and download them. They'll all go to your downloads folder.
Another question then, is this Wi-Fi linked as in web app? Are you going to be on the same Wi-Fi network or is it?
No.
It's just, it's no. It'll work over 3G if you're away from home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Excellent. Really good pick. Like that. It's free as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
See, it's free. We like free. So. Free apps. God, I love those. So getting back to Facebook. Now, Alex, you have had a play with Facebook. I was going to give you a bit more time to sit and play with it because I know you've only just started.
It's extensive research. What I can see is, first of all, it hasn't blown up my phone, so that's a really good start. It seems to be a completely independent application as well. I've only ever used Instagram again for research, and once I've finished with the research in this, I'm going to delete it. But it seems to have less filters, etc. But you know, it's got enough to get you going. It's got enough to take an iPhone picture or you know what device you're using it on, tidy it up, make it look a bit pretty. It then gives you the option of you know putting some words to it and posting it to your Facebook account. It's completely independent though, so you can use the application. You can just put it in your, you know, camera roll, whatever you want to do anyway. So the end result is it's a quick, easy way, dedicated app to take pictures, put your post, put your writing on and upload it. But, you know, it's fairly basic. But, I mean, my understanding of it, which I read yesterday, is they bought a company that made this software some time ago, long before Instagram came along. So they've been sort of they bought a company to get the application. For a damn sight less than they paid for Instagram. So it seems to be they've bought Instagram for the community of Instagram, but the application is almost irrelevant.
I think that, I mean, the thing to address in the conversation that we're having here is, you know, thinking of Jeremy's review there, he said, you know, it's Canon and Nikon. Well, we're all Canon and Nikon shooters, and we don't just do that. We do other cameras. But he's saying there about it's all about the iPhone, but I'm sorry, but you've got to say that there's an awful lot of people that are listening to us that use iPhone as a method of photography. And I have to say, on days out with the family, I'm becoming one of them because now I've got the 4S. The 4S is taking pictures that, for me, are very acceptable. I got a great tip off Andy Anatko the other week when he was on the show. He said, try 645 Pro. And 645 Pro is brilliant because you can auto-lock on for exposure and focus. It does a fantastic job of almost getting to the point of being a manual camera, in inverted commas. And you can follow once you've locked the aperture and exposure, you can move around and it'll keep the same exposure values. It won't try and change them at all. It does a far, far better job. And yesterday, my lad learnt to ride a bike. And I said last night on the big show, you know, my camera of choice for video was my iPhone. I got 1080p video that was shot perfectly well. And the thing is, as well, I'm holding my phone in my hand, so he's not intimidated and not wobbling on his bike. I've got to say, old Annie, now I didn't agree with her on 4, but now that there's a 4S out there, I think iPhone photography is more relevant as a topic to majority of listeners to this podcast than others.
Of course it is. I mean, I can talk about cameras I used, which there's probably maybe 5,000 people in the whole world that use the cameras I use.
Mm.
You know, but I would be talking to a very limited amount of people that all have to be pretty damn up on knowledge to be able to use these cameras in the first place. iPhone, number one camera in the world at the moment. I have no objection to it. The idea of photography, and especially the idea of the photography we talk about, is do you want to enjoy taking pictures? If you do, we'll help you with the limited knowledge we have, but we'll help you be able to use what you've got to enjoy the most out of it. And that's where we come from. I think this idea, I mean, Facebook, this, I mean, going back to the Facebook app, which is where we started, it's a nice little idea. The camera, which is in the phone, gives you a half-decent picture. And that's what all these applications, 645, it's what Instagram, it's what all these applications need to start off with. You need a half-decent picture before you can do something artistic with it. There's no point in having a load of rubbish and then trying to make it artistic. It's like trying to fix a picture that's out of focus. As much as you try, it's never going to look right. So these things, they're very good for what they do. And for the majority of people, a one-stop, being able to press your button, put your words on it, buzz it out to Facebook with a few little jollied up edges and a little bit of color correction, a little bit of cropping. I think for the vast majority of photos taken today and for the foreseeable future, this type of application is all that is needed. And good luck to them.
Excellent. Now, the one thing that bothers me with these is the fact that very often they'll take a picture and they'll remain within the application. They don't put one as your basic iPhone image folder, as your photo stream. Does this one do that, or is this purely enclosed and sandboxed?
Notice when I first set it up, the first question it asked me is, do I want to link this to my photo stream?
Now, but the thing is, does it link the original photo to the photo stream, or does it link the filtered image to the photo stream?
Well, if you give me a couple of minutes, I'll tell you.
The one thing I'm thinking here is, with the 4S, it takes an extremely good picture. I would like to think that this thing would take the extremely good picture and then doctor it afterwards, because one of the things that Instagram lacks, one of the things that Analog App really lacks, is the judicious application of the filters to the image. They tend to wreck the image in the process of applying the filters. So that's one caveat for me in all of this.
Okay, well, I can tell you, just going to the camera roll, the original picture I took is in there, and not the upside down played around one.
Brilliant.
The filtered messed around one is somewhere waiting to go to Facebook.
That makes it appeal to me very much more straight away. Chris, you were going to say something there?
I know on Instagram there are settings where you can save the original, like the high full resolution, because Instagram only uploads a 612 by 612 pixel image to the actual Instagram website. But there's a setting where you could save the full resolution version to your phone. And also, I would just say this is the way I use Instagram about 90% of the time, is I take the picture with the phone.
And then doctor it.
Just the standard camera app, and then doctor it. Yeah, because just like you said, sometimes it's something I would like a picture of anyway, but what I'm going to share is the Instagram version, but I'm going to, I might save that picture for just personal reference or whatever. So 90% of the time. Now, if it's just something that's like goofy or silly or whatever, a lot of times I'll take the picture right in the Instagram app. Doing that only saves like maybe 10, 20 seconds. It's not like a huge deal.
So Alex, we've given you sort of 5 minutes there to review. Hit or miss for you, just instantly off the bat?
As much as it pains me, I'd say it's a hit.
Oh!
I won't be using it, but I'd say it's a hit.
The only thing going up this week is the number of is the number of sales of that app, then.
The only other thing I'd say is, isn't there some argument about who owns the images on Facebook?
No, they do. You post it, they own it.
All right, so there is no argument. You've given it away.
No,
so this is an interesting way of upping your catalogue of images.
Yeah, if you post them up there, they own it. And if you take it down, there is some debate about whether they should take it down or not if you've requested it to be taken down. And I think they've said that they will, but they still technically own it as far as they're concerned. But it's whether they enforce that or not. I think that they've been pretty good about it, but they've certainly hedged it in their favour. In terms of the EULA for it.
Wow.
Pentax have, we give Pentax a bit of a kicking on this show once in a while, it has to be said. And they do deserve it, I think, because they come out with Lego cameras and things like that. But there's a couple of cameras come out this week and a couple of lenses that are Pentax friendly. And I've got to say, quite impressed. Now, the first one is the one that you've put in, Chris, into the show notes. The XK30?
Mm-hmm.
So talk us through this. What's it aimed at? Because you've read it, we haven't. So,
well, they're, you know, Pentax has like their top end, like kind of their high end cameras, the K5. And then they've got their lower end model. This kind of slides right in into sort of like the mid level range. But one of the things that's so nice about it is that it's really well constructed and completely weather sealed. So typically, it's the kind of features that you will only get on the higher end pro cameras. And so if you shoot a lot outdoors or in not so nice conditions, it's a really nice feature to have. But you know, I mean, it's got, I would say it's got kind of a mix of mid-level and pro features, so it's a pretty good value. I think it's well under $1,000 for the camera.
Why?
I think about $800 US. So
that is good.
16 megapixel. Pentax uses Sony sensors, and they make some really good ones.
Good noise ratio, it says.
Yeah.
In the review. And they're saying as well that they've got a shutter speed up to 1/6,000th, which is pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad at all. A lot of them, the cheaper cameras tend to top out 1/5,000th, 1/4,000th.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
That's excellent.
So it's actually, it's an incredibly good value for a camera. And, you know, it's sort of interesting because I was just thinking about this morning. I'm sort of in a position where I don't shoot, I just don't shoot the level of professional work that I used to. I mean, it's just occasional, very occasional. You know, I'm still using a Canon 20D. It still works, so I still use it. I'd like something newer, but I just can't justify. Yeah, I can't just. It's really hard to justify spending, you know, $3,000-$4,000 on like a 5D or, you know, something new like that.
Well, I got to defend you there, Chris, and say there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, My backup body up until a few weeks ago when I got a 600D, which is still a pretty crappy camera in inverted commas, I had a 450D. That was my backup body when I went to shoot, and it shoots perfectly good images. I got away with it commercially. I had a struggle to fill a billboard with it, I don't doubt, but you know, it was good enough. There's nothing wrong with a 20D.
Sure. I'm not saying that. But it's just I don't have a backup. That's it. If that craps out, I'm stuck. But I honestly, because I don't shoot as much professionally anymore, I'm tempted to look at cameras like this, you know, even though I don't have a any Pentax gear anymore, really.
No.
I'm tempted to get something like this just because I can just use it more for fun and just kind of explore it and play with it. And I'm not looking at it as like, okay, is this camera going to return X number of dollars for me, or you know, is it going to work with my studio setup and blah blah blah? So it's just interesting. I was just kind of thinking about this morning that I'm no longer thinking about, oh, you know, is this camera going to work for my professional work? I'm thinking, oh, this camera would just kind of be fun to buy and use, and maybe it works, and if it doesn't, I'll trade it in and get something else.
Yeah, and you probably get good resale on it as well.
Yeah,
Alex, any first thoughts?
Well, I think there's a really, really big place for this sort of camera in the market. I mean, you've probably both been in the same situation as me. You've been somewhere and you've got professional equipment, and either, you know, I've done some photography on beaches and things like that, and the wind's been blowing and things, you know, and I'm standing there with an expensive piece of equipment, and it is sealed, but it's not built for the job. And you've got sea spray, and it's just not built for the job. And the type of picture you normally want to take there, you don't really need the top end professional abilities of your camera. You need something that's not going to crap out as soon as the wind blows the rain or the sea spray or the salt into the front of your camera. And this sort of thing, which is, it's right in the middle. It's got a good enough quality that it's almost like a point and shoot on steroids. And when you're in that sort of situation, that's what you need, because it's all to do with timing. It's not to do with how much zoom you've got in the lens. Is not all to do with the noise ratios. It's not all to do with everything that we worry about in a studio setup. What it's to do with is being able to point it in places where you wouldn't dare stick an expensive or very expensive professional camera. You know it's going to survive, and you know it's going to do the work that you need to do in a split second to get that moment you need. You know, if you're firing off something on the beach and someone's diving in the sea, or you've got a model, jumping out of the water, and you want to get that splash and everything, you need something that's going to be fast and not crap out. You don't need a very, very expensive professional camera. And I think this is exact. This is a holiday camera on steroids, which you can get away with doing professional work with. And I'd rather use this than my professional equipment in a lot of circumstances.
Now, the other thing that's interesting as well this week with Pentax is they brought out the K01. Now, the K01 has got the very staid and very functional and very attractive black version. And it, unfortunately, because Pentax just cannot let go of this, some dickhead got a spray of yellow paint and they've gone and done the body yellow. And it looks disgusting. Well, but we're gonna pass over the yellow and go back to the black, because actually this looks like, I think, a pretty decent camera. Well done, Pentax.
Here's the interesting thing about it. This, the design, they hired this really, I guess, you know, if you know much about like the design world, the guy that designed this is really famous. I admit, I don't know the guy, but you know, that's not the circle I run in. So it was part of the concept of it is to be this kind of clever, you know, object art, you know. So that I agree with you. I'm not a fan of the yellow at all, and I'm wondering, you know, how many people are really going to be a fan of it. But you know, that's part of the, you know, I don't know, aesthetic, clever style, whatever it's supposed to be. So just some background on that.
Yeah, I mean
it's. I got to see this camera at CES. excuse me. a pre-production prototype before they announced it, and it's honestly, it's like a brick. I mean, it's solid and heavy.
I was gonna say, are you talking build quality, or are you saying it's pretty functionless?
No. I mean build quality. It's like a brick. What I found most interesting though is this is Pentax's mirrorless camera. But they've just gone a completely different direction with it. Instead of taking advantage of that mirror not being there and making it smaller and thinner and lighter, it's basically almost the same size as the rest of their 30 or their digital cameras, and it has the same exact back focus distance, so you can use all of their K-mount lenses. So you're not limited by any lenses.
I mean, it's got that expandability. I mean, it's compact, it's small, it takes a great range. I mean, if you look at the test shots that are shot on this, I think one of the things that's quite interesting, especially when you look at the tech radar analysis of cameras, their laboratory benchmarks, typically what you'll find is whatever the top ISO rating is, that camera managed to produce a completely unusable image. And it doesn't matter what that top end ratio is. You know, if it's 25600, then it's a bad image. What I found interesting with this is that the JPEG does a better job of color aberration than the RAW does. I mean, okay, the RAW's catching more, and it's designed to catch that's there, but there's a lot of aberrations turning up on that, which shouldn't be there in a RAW image over the top of a JPEG. But the 25600 image, it's not usable. You couldn't sell an image based on that. But if you were in real, real low light and you wanted a decent image of just, you know, you and your friends, you've seen them for the first time in 4 years, and it's not a great image, but you can clean it up a little bit later on, get rid of the few of the color spots in Photoshop, it would give you a passable image, wouldn't it? It would give you something mm-hmm. that would be good for a 7x5 or something like that, which a lot of these cameras don't seem to do at the top end. And through the other ISO shots for test, they're very, very usable. I mean, right up to the 12800, it's very good.
Yeah. And this is the same sensor they're using that Pentax is using in the K30.
Yeah.
Same 16 megapixel APS-C Sony sensor. So it's a good sensor.
Yeah.
And they're also using the same processor. So, you know, again, for people who are considering, who are less concerned with the fancy looks and looking for something that can kind of complement, you know, be a really good advanced amateur camera, complement a pro setup. Again, you know, you're going to get that same image quality from the K30.
Any thoughts, Alex?
Well, you know, just to be different, I actually quite like what it looks like.
Yeah. No, it's the yellow one I don't like.
I don't mind the yellow. I think what it is, I suppose it's like anything. You get tired of the ergonomics. You get tired of seeing the same thing. It's like 10 years ago or 15 years ago, all the cars had square edges. Now they've all got round edges. When you see a car with square mm-hmm. edges these days, you sort of go, oh, isn't that smart? You know, it's just you get used to one thing and it just gets a bit boring. Now, I quite like this. I think the images are good. I like the fact that it's not covered in a million and one buttons. I like the fact that, you know, if you, you know, look at the biggest piece of iconic design in the last 10 years or whatever, it's the iPhone, which is a square brick. You know, it might be mm-hmm. a thin brick, but it's still a square brick. It does nothing else. And I think this mm-hmm. sits into the same sort of ergonomic. It makes sense to me.
It does have a little bit of a handle. It's like a brick with a handle.
Yeah, and I quite like it.
A recessed brick.
There you go.
That'll do.
Expensive brick.
Coming in at $649 on Amazon, which is £649 on Amazon. So that's about $800,000. No, it's about $800.
$800,000.
So that's sitting pretty similar. I mean, bear in mind, we do play a little bit over the odds over here because sales tax is included in that, which it's not in the US. So that'll make a bit of a difference. Should we do some questions?
Go for it.
Good week's news. We've got
very quickly.
Yep.
It's not sad, but I'd just like to say goodbye to the APS film. That is the one thing
I did have that one. Yeah, I did have that one up. Fujifilm has got rid of APS. I never used APS. My father used it in a camera that he bought, but I was always shooting 35mm anyway, so I had no reason to go with it.
I bought a camera because at the time, I bought an APS camera because at the time, that was the first change in technology since 35mm had been introduced. Mm-hmm.
No, that's true.
Did you get that Nikon APS SLR?
I bought a Fuji.
Oh, and a little snapshot camera.
Yeah, but what I loved is if you remember, the whole reason you bought APS is one, you didn't have to go into the bathroom in the hotel room where you were in and, you know, put your hand over the door and you'd shut everything and block all the light to change your film. And two, you could take a film out halfway. You didn't have to finish the film. And this was like absolutely, this was the pinnacle of technology at the time. And yes, fair enough, its time was gone. But I just thought it was worth sort of saying goodbye because of it was the first innovation. It was the jump from 35mm to where we are now.
I never used it and I don't understand the technology behind it, I freely admit. But my perception of this film was always that the elongation feature that you got was actually just cropping off a 35mm frame anyway, and all they'd managed to do was get a more light tight container, which is why you could swap it out mid shots, and also the fact that the film was encoded digitally with information about what had been selected on the camera. It didn't actually physically change what went onto the film itself. Is that right or wrong?
The film was the same.
The film was the same
material. The base was a little bit thicker, which enabled the automatic loading and unloading and reloading. One of the things that it did is that it recorded the last frame you had used. Mm-hmm. So when you put in a hash finished roll back into a camera, it would just wind automatically to the next empty frame.
Yeah. So it was the first time that there'd been any kind of digital information inscribed within the system.
But what was inside was a
35mm film, effectively.
Yeah, but you had a choice of format. You could go 35mm shape, or you could go wide.
Yeah, but if you went wide, all it did was crop the 35 that you captured.
Do you know what? I can't remember.
No?
I thought it added a bit more.
The full frame, it was the I don't know the exact size, but you got a 4x7-inch print. If you selected C, which is classic, it cropped the sides to give you a 4x6. And if you selected P, which was panorama, obviously it cropped the top and bottom to give you a panorama.
Right. Okay.
It was just the fact
and that. When you select, it depends on the camera, but all the higher end cameras, some of the cheap ones didn't do this, but all the high end cameras, it would shoot a full frame every time and it would just encode whether you had selected the H or I guess HD or whatever. The C or the P, and then that information would tell the processing machine, you know, you just pop the roll of film in the photo lab, the technician would pop it in there, and it would automatically say, well, this customer shot this as C, so crop it as a 4x6.
Yeah, it was cropped. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. I don't know if I should be proud or ashamed to say that I never owned an APS camera or I never shot an APS roll of film.
No, it was very amateur, but I bought one because I buy stuff.
Never mind. Questions.
Too late now.
Now, we haven't got a six things, but I think our first question kind of provides us with a quick six things. I've got a pretty simple question. Hey, guys, love the show, sorry. Got a simple, pretty question, but one which always is difficult for me on days out in the summer. How do I deal with strong sunlight on a day out with the family? Sorry if this sounds too simple, but I only carry a compact camera, a Lumix, so that's not too bad anyway, mm-hmm. though. Amateurishly yours, Sarah Burrows in Fife. Right, Fife's in Scotland, by the way. It's a kingdom itself, the kingdom
There's
of Fife.
There's a few things.
Yeah. Six things to a consider fiefdom. About strong... It's a fiefdom. Six things to consider about shooting with a compact camera in strong sunlight. Chris, start us off with the first one, and then we'll go to Alex, then me, and then you, and then me, and then him.
Yeah. I got a couple I can think of off the top of my head.
Just do one.
One thing you can do... So here's a trick. First, you think, well, if I put the people with the sun to their back... Okay, then they're going to be in shadow. So people tend to have people face the sun, and they'll be well lit. The problem is the sun's right in their eyes, and so they're squinty and they make faces. So the easy way to fix this is to put the sun at their back, and then use a fill flash setting to just fill in the subject's faces. The other super, super easy old school thing is just move into the shade.
Yeah, I mean, move. If you're going to shoot into the sun, though, presumably you're talking about having sun out of frame. Otherwise, you'll burn your retina,
right? or burn your shutter.
Just feel. Just feel like we should do that. Try not that. Don't try this one at home. Part, but good tip. Otherwise, Alex.
Well, I mean, you can filter it to a certain extent. I mean, one of the things I used to do is I used to put sunglasses in front of the lens if I was having trouble, and then I would take the exposure off of the people, and that tended to equalize it slightly more. I mean, the background was still light, but it didn't burn out the image. Don't
use prescription lenses.
No. you can do things like if you've got water, if you can have water, the water actually works to bounce the light back up into their faces. You can use reflectors, which is the same as using fill-in flash. Mm. But, you know, in general, with point-and-shoot cameras, in a funny way, if you do, use a point exposure with a fill-in flash, or not even a fill-in flash, if you use point exposure on a compact, like a Lumix, they are very, very good at sorting out the exposure for you. And they do various compensations inside. And also remembering, unless you've completely burnt out the background, you can recover most things if you've got a piece of software to do so. So it's not the end of the world. But the only other thing I have done, especially with the children, is I get them to look down. And at the very last moment, I say, look up and smile. They look up and smile because it takes a few seconds for your eyes to be affected by the sun. And I just get a picture that way. I don't get them staring at me until the very last moment. And that sometimes happens. Well, it works with the kids. I'm sure it doesn't work that well with adults because they're too intelligent to know. But I do that with the kids. I'll tell them to shut their eyes and just open them at the last moment and smile. It does make for a happy picture as well.
My tips would be kind of similar a little bit to the first thing that Alex said there. Don't meter off things that are bright for a start. Don't meter off faces. Don't meter off light clothing, that kind of thing. Try and find something that's much more of a neutral tone between black and whites, and neuter off that, an entirely different process. Don't try that one at home either. So look for things that you can meter off, which are not strong whites, not strong blacks. Always avoid metering off shadows, always avoid metering off highlights. Any picture that you shoot, doesn't matter what it is, you want your whites to be white and your blacks to be black, and to get that good contrast range, you've got to make sure that your mid-tones are really well exposed. And the second tip, especially if you're shooting people sometime between 12 and 2 o'clock in the day, is rather than shooting on the same level as them where you've got the sun coming straight down and creating very dark shadows off the eyes and under the nose and things like that, kind of Lee Harvey Oswald gunshot, always try and get yourself above them so that they're looking up towards you and you get a much more even illuminance of the face. So sitting on the grass, that kind of stuff, and then shoot down on them. And then it doesn't really matter much wherever the sun is around you because the sun's not in the frame and it's not creating strong shadows one way or the way. You can be behind them and it's still going to illuminate their face. But there you go. That's our six things for the week. Good question. Good question, Sarah. No such thing as stupid questions, mate. Question two. I've got a lot of images which I shot originally in JPEG with my Digital Rebel about 8 years ago. I want to keep them safe. I already back them up and follow the 3-2-1 principles of backup, but wondered if I could get any benefit in saving them as TIFF images over JPEGs. I think no, as they're already JPEG, but I hear that JPEGs can degrade if copied and saved. Is that true or is that a myth? What about raw images? Is there any advantage to converting and saving these as TIFF in case there are any future legacy issues over raw codecs? Thanks, Mike O'Brien, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
I'll take a stab at this.
Go for it.
The idea you're talking about as far as JPEGs opening and saving them repeatedly causing degradation is true, because the JPEG format is a lossy compression format. So what it does is it tries to eliminate details and sometimes colors, just different things that it tries to eliminate, those things that you are least likely to see depending on the compression level. There's adjustable compression level. So each time you save, if you open the JPEG, do something to it, then save it as a JPEG again, it will degrade the quality. Then you open that same resave JPEG, do something to it, save it again, you get what's called generational loss. But there's not really a strict benefit of saving the original as a TIFF, because you should always save the original file, and when you want to do something, start from the original.
Yeah.
In that case, you'll always have the same starting point, whether you save it as a JPEG or a TIFF, doesn't matter. You'll always start at the same starting point. As far as raw files are concerned,
I think the question is, would you take a raw file and put it into another format to split your formats just as a protection against a legacy issue with raw codecs?
I'm thinking that's not a bad idea.
I think that's a pretty good idea, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if for some reason that raw file can't be processed anymore, you won't get all the advantages that you get of raw, being able to tweak the raw data into a different, a slightly different form. But the TIFF file format is an extremely simple and straightforward format. So I can't imagine that ever being, it's not proprietary in any way. It's open, it's simple to process. So I can't imagine that being...
Is anyone hearing famous last words in their ears at this point? No. Alex, any thoughts?
Well, first of all, just to say, if you've already saved it, if the original file you've got is JPEG, then don't bother converting it to anything else. It's just, if you ever want to use that JPEG and do something with it,
never save.
Yeah. Keep the original locked down, never change it. Do a save as, a completely new file, never write over the original file, and you can't degrade that. Raw, I don't know if there's going to be a legacy issue, but, that's the whole point of a legacy issue. There's no way of telling the future. What I'd suggest, if you want to take your RAW and save them as anything, save them as TIFF, but save them as a TIFF with LZW compression, which is a lossless, completely lossless file type. It can reduce, depending on the colours in it, but if you've got a very light image and there's a lot of light in the background, you can half the size of a TIFF by saving it as a LZW. Completely lossless, it will open up exactly as it was, so you're saving it basically as much as half the size as the original. But if you've already got a JPEG, there's no point in doing anything else with them. Just make sure you lock that so it can never be copied over.
What about raw protection?
I can't honestly say. The only thing I'd say, if you're really worried about raw, then download Adobe's DNG converter. Then convert everything, whatever raw file you've got, is into a DNG file, which then gives you all the ability to change RAW or change the files in exactly the same as RAW does, but it's a common, what's the word?
It's open format.
It's a common open format, which gives you the same abilities, but it's uniform. So you've got to convert from what you've got to DNG. And so if you want to save something for the future so you can manipulate it a bit better, convert them to DNG and save that.
Okay, great. Good tips. I got nothing to add. What do I know? Question 3. Hi, guys. Straight question. I've got PS4. Wonder if it's a good idea to move to PS6. Followed your conversation in the past on Photoshop and saying about missing an upgrade. I've missed this one out already. Should I think about changing? Just interested in what you think, Gary Bond, Swindon.
I like PS5.
I like five.
Mm-hmm. And I...
That's not going to help. Gary, you shouldn't have bought four, dude.
No, I mean, the only difference is, I mean, they're not very good at knocking down the previous versions. That's the only trouble. PS6 is like PS5 on steroids. I would have said it doesn't warrant a full upgrade. You know, if it was an operating system, it would be, you know, an increment. It would be 10.7.2. It wouldn't be PS6.
So he's going 4 to 6, though. You're saying that's worth it?
Mm-hmm.
Only for a couple of things that turned up in 5. What's in 6 is irrelevant, but you're not going to be able to get 5 on an upgrade for any less, so you might as well go for 6.
Right.
I don't know. I think there's some pretty sweet stuff in 6.
Well, nothing that floats my boat. That's the point. It's, you know, it's what you use.
Yeah, I mean, my comment here would be the upgrade from 4 to 5 was worth it. Because I think I had 4. And when I saw 5, and especially things like content aware delete, that sold it for me, and I got it. And I've probably used it 4 times in a year.
Puppet Warp takes that one step further. They have that content aware move.
Yeah, no, I saw that. You can pick some up and move it across. By the way, while we're on the subject, Bad Photoshop of the Week award goes to the Chinese government. This is a group of officials who allegedly are inspecting a park. I think they've got the scale slightly wrong, because I think those Chinese people are about 8 foot tall, and B, they've maybe even 20 foot tall, and B, they've also got the perspective wrong. But that's
well, I like the guy on the path is actually floating 2 foot above the ground, which I like.
Yeah. Never mind. They should just cut the legs off and be done with it and shrunk it down. But so I would have said buy 4 to 5 regardless. So 4 to 6, yes, for me, would be worth it. But I haven't got 6. I'm not going 5 to 6.
No, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I'm still using 3.
Well, the thing is, I bought upgrades to Photoshop because I was like, oh, that's really cool. And I would say 98% of what I do with Photoshop today, I could have done in 7. As in
mm-hmm.
Photoshop 7, the one that was back 19... No.
Oh, I remember. I still have it. I still have that.
Was it 2000? No, it was about 1999, wasn't it?
Yeah.
1999.
I still got it.
And also as well, some of the things that I used to do for removal of noise were better in Photoshop 7 than they are in the current one.
Yeah, here's my Photoshop tip. Learn how to use the history brush properly with various filters. I reckon I've discovered that's probably my best noise and despeckle tool there is. There's various things you can do with it, but, you know, use the history brush and paint back in time, paint back over conversions and things, and that will save you a lot of time and effort. You might not even need PS6 if you work out how to use PS4 properly.
Very good. Okay. This podcast and all of the others on the network are brought to you thanks to UK2.net. They are the people who keep us afloat. We couldn't do anything without them. They absorb an enormous amount of bandwidth. 14 terabytes last month of shows have gone out. And it's thanks to you guys, because A, you buy the podcasts, if you like, in inverted commas, and B, you buy their services. If you didn't link through to them and spend your money with them when you do want web stuff, then again, we wouldn't exist. They wouldn't keep sponsoring us. We provide them with a return on investment, unquote. You know, you guys buy more than it costs to keep us afloat. So thank you very much. And we do absorb an awful lot with them. If you want to buy stuff, though, please, please, please don't just go to UK2 and then put the offer codes in because you know them. Please go through our website. It's kind of like one of those things you get with Domino's Pizza. You know, if you want to buy a Domino's Pizza, you go and order it and then you go off and look for a voucher code on the net. Well, our stuff can pop up in the voucher code stuff. If you've gone through the tracking link off our homepage, britishtechnews.com, and then go through that link, they'll know that we sent you, and then any of the voucher codes that you apply will be applied to us as a credit. So we don't get any money for that, but we'll get the kudos for it. If you just go straight there and put the voucher codes in, they disregard those as being from us. It's not us trying to get hits to our website. It's them. They're the ones that have asked us to do this because they want to make sure that we get the credit for the people that we've sent to them. So please do that. Offer codes are dead simple. All you got to do is put in British Tech, and then whatever you've bought, try a code. If it's VPS, put VPS in and you'll get a reduction. VPN, you get a reduction. Domains, you'll get a reduction. DNS, you'll get a reduction. All of those kinds of stuff. Just put something in. Just bake some letters up and see what you get. You might get your basket free of charge if you put the right. It might be a Willy Wonka thing. There might be a golden ticket code that we don't know about. Give them a go. We're going to put the codes up on the website this week. It's on a list of things to do that's been out there for a while. We're also on Stitcher Radio this week for the first time. So we're back on with them. We did all the Bagel Tech stuff was them. Now British Tech is on there. All the shows are on there. We've also got some brand new shows as well, which are taking advantage of UK too. We've got the Gamer Show, which is fabulous. It is a show of choice for me. I'm not on it, that's why. It's a guy called Paul Wheatley who hosts it with a couple of his mates, Cheers and Stew. And I've said the name wrong, it's not Stew. But you go with them and have a listen. And even if you don't like games, you still want to listen to it. It's a good kind of vibe about the show. Go and have a listen. And there's a great feature on there where Paul gives out two games from the bargain basement thing on PC World, you know, $4.99 games, and says, right, go away and play with those for 2 weeks and then come back and review them. And the reviews are interesting. But please have a give that a listen because it's well worth it. And the last word has got to go to the Bash. The Bash is now just over a month away, 6th of July. It's going to be here in Birmingham. We've got a massive open space. We've got a 5-acre field to have this thing in. We've got power supplied, so there's no worries about it. We've also got one of our kind supporters, Andy, is going to take all of your MiFis and link them up and power them up, and he's going to make a super hub. So effectively, all of the Wi-Fis are going to be joined together and make a massive Wi-Fi network that we can use throughout the whole day. And we're going to do every show on the network. It's going to be done during the Bash. There's going to be a pig roast there sponsored by TechSmith. I'm talking to a firm in Birmingham who are going to provide us with some beer in exchange for a little bit of work. And
it sounds like Woodstock for photo nerds. Is that?
It's kind of going to be that way. It is going to be that way. And also Andy and Atco's coming. He's going to be over here, and we've got a few quid to chuck his way just to help cover with the airfare and stuff. And there's another guy that's coming called Paul Kirkle, and he is an iPad artist, and he's already done three fantastic pictures for us. They're going to be printed out on A2 board, and Andy, he and I will sign them, and you get to take those away as well as. And we're going to make you pay for those, but we're going to give the money from them to charity. So the Will Green's charity is the NSPCC, so I think we're going to shove them that way. If you possibly can. Please do come if you can. You need to buy a ticket, though. Go to British Tech News, BritishTechNetwork.com. There's a banner on there. Click on that. It takes you to Eventbrite. You need to buy a ticket off them at £20, and then that'll pay for absolutely everything on the day. So please come along. It should be a lot of fun. Really enjoyable. Alex is going to be there. I'm going to be there. Steve's going to be there. Chris may not be there. You'll be there in spirit. You're certainly coming to do a show.
Absolutely. If there is anyone running around with no pants on, I'm definitely there in spirit.
Yeah, you'll be on the show because the photo show is going to be recorded there. So yeah, you just have a few more participants, including Mr. Anatko. So he'll be giving us the benefit of his photographic knowledge.
Oh, you've got to remember, we have to buy some wine for the ladies.
Yeah, there is some ladies coming as well. Teresa's coming with her husband, and Paul Wheatley's bringing his wife. He said, is there any girls at this thing? I said, I'm not so sure. I don't know how many of the people that listen to the show have ever met a girl. But no, there's going to be lots.
Apparently, my wife's one.
There's going to be lots of girls there, mate. So
that's not a
bring your best tie look because you're going to get a date. There's going to be lots of partners there. There you go.
And me.
Right. We'll see you next week. We've got the first show again as normal. It's a bank holiday. Are we going to do it?
Probably.
Yeah, I don't see why not. We'll do it.
Alex G. Fox on Twitter.
There you go. And Chris, where can we get you, mate?
ArsTechnica.com, or you can hit me on Twitter at ForzMac.
Thanks, mate. I'm Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, and you can get me at ewanrankin.co.uk for commercial photography work if you really would like it. And I'm going to put me studio up at some point. So I've put a bid on a studio, and there will be a studio in Birmingham for you all to come and have a play in. There we go. See you next week. Thanks for listening. Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.